This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now it is our animal day today, and we are going to discover what your dog is thinking from a groundbreaking book by a world-renowned neuroscientist and a highly respected dog trainer. Welcome to them both, Dr. Sabrina Cohen-Hatton and Danny Wells.
Hi,
you're welcome. Let me get this right. So, Sabrina, you're a doctor, so you're the neuroscientist.
Yeah, that's right.
Which means Danny must be the trainer.
Absolutely. And it's imperative we get that right.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Well, I mean, I'm a massive animal lover. I've always had dogs. And I do think that they've all got personalities. And I try really, really hard to not treat the one we've got remaining at the moment as my baby. But she is my baby.
Well, you know, don't feel too badly about that, because in the book we talk about exactly this. And there have been some lovely studies that have looked at the way that our brains work when we're looking at our dogs. And one particular study put mothers in a brain scanner when they were looking at pictures of their dogs and their children, as well as random dogs and random children. And, you know, you have really similar brain activity when you're looking at your dog to your own child. And it's probably why we like to nurture and care for our dogs so much. So don't feel too bad. But there is a really serious side to that, because if we treat our dogs like little humans, then we're not being fair to them, because we expect reactions from them that we'd expect from a human. And it's not the same with a dog, and we miss their beauty as dogs.
Yeah.
That contributes towards us misunderstanding them, and then, you know, it becomes a very stressful relationship at times when it doesn't need to be like that.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, because you want them to understand, you know, I love you, I'm going to leave the door for you, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And of course, they're animals at the end of the day. But yeah. do they love like we love? Do they just want us for food, or do they actually care for us?
Well, with some dogs, you might be forgiven for thinking that. But the research shows that dogs' neurobiology, their biological reactions that they have in their brains when they're engaging with us, would suggest that they are actually quite fond of us. It's definitely not just the food. So, for example, when you look at your dog and your dog looks back at you, provided you've got a bond with your dog, your brain and the dog's brain releases something called oxytocin, which has been dubbed the love hormone. It's associated with things like love and social bonding and trust. And the more you look at your dog, the more of that is released, and the same with your dog back. So it might not be love in the sense that we experience love, but there's certainly a rudimentary form.
Okay. And Danny, from your point of view, I mean, I, as I'm sure a lot of people do, talk to my dog in human language, of course. Would you like a biscuit?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
but do you think they do get to learn? Is it the connotations? Is it the tone of your voice? Is it actually, are they learning our language? Would my dog understand what a biscuit is?
Well, they learn associatively. So if your pattern of behaviour where you say, "Do you want a biscuit?" a biscuit constantly follows that, then yeah, through associative learning, your dog learned that all of the above, your facial expressions, the tone of your voice, and the words, "Do you want a biscuit?" all mean the outcome will be a biscuit.
Yeah. And when I open the cupboard door and she knows the sound.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As much as even just putting your coat on, if it's the coat that you take the dog for a walk, your dog's skipping around the kitchen ready to go.
Yeah. And then you feel really guilty because you're
Absolutely. A lot of counter conditioning work we do is when dogs get too excited and bulldoze the house. And we have to get clients like constantly doing the same routine where they're taking the dog for a walk, but it doesn't end in a walk all the time. So you're desensitizing the dog to the pattern of behavior. So they're not getting too excited all the time.
What about some of the usual things, Danny, like a dog that continuously barks? I mean, we know if somebody knocks at the door, for example, that's what they're doing. They're protecting you. But a dog that continuously barks, how would you handle that dog?
So they're not trying to protect necessarily, you know. Very few dogs that will naturally just try and protect. Normally they're self-preservating. They associate it with the unknown, and they bark, and it's like, a warning, you know, back off, there's a big dog here, stay away, that kind of thing. We talk about this in the book. We actually have a chapter where we talk about dogs that, like, bark a lot in the house, and we resolve it by teaching them what it is to bark and then teach them to stop on command. So as we teach them to bark, they'll be rewarded for the bark, and eventually that behavior evolves into, when you're quiet, you get your reward, and now your dog understands the concept of be quiet, and then more rewards are released as the silence overweighs the barking.
And Sabrina, no, you go.
There's actually some really lovely research that looks at how dogs have evolved alongside humans to bark, because, of course, their closest ancestors, the wolves, didn't bark. They would howl, and that helps to carry their voices over long distances. But there is some research that suggests that dogs evolved barks to communicate with humans specifically over shorter distances.
Yeah. Right, got you. You see, my dog, they've all copied each other down the line. Every dog that I've had has been a television barker. You know, if an animal comes on the television, or sometimes a human, if they don't like the look of them. And I remember I always shouted at her, which I thought was commanding her to say, stop it barking, hoping that would help. Yeah. But I was told by another dog psychologist that actually she thinks you're barking with her. She thinks you're joining in. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And we touch on this in the book as well, because what they think is, this is fantastic, because my human, my bringer of fun, the person who's the best person in the world, is now barking with me. So let's bark more. So it's not always the best route. But dogs have evolved specialized brain machinery to understand, to decode our voices in a way that we've only ever seen previously with great apes. So they actually understand more than you might think. But a lot of the processing that they do is around the emotionality in our voices. So it's not so much the words that we say, although they can discriminate up to about 1,000 words for some dogs, but they're listening to how you're saying it and what that might mean for your mood and how you're feeling about a situation, and that guides how then they react.
There's also another element to that scenario. Sometimes when you lose your temper a bit and you shout at your dog, you'll get a little brief pause from your dog where they're trying to work out what's going on. And we interpret that as they understand that you're telling them to be quiet, because they did be quiet. And then when they go back to bark, and when they realise there's nothing really to work out here, we get frustrated thinking that they're ignoring us. So there's a lot of miscommunication that happens in that scenario.
So how would you handle it, Danny, with my barking dog? What would you suggest? How would I stop it?
First off, we talk about this in the book, what's happening with all your dogs learning that from each other. We call that allelometic behaviour. They're learning behaviour from observing the other dog. So when you bring the next dog into the household, I wouldn't really be having them in the same environment to learn that from the next dog, if that makes sense. Yeah. Also, just breaking a small pattern of the behaviour might stop that instantly. So obviously, they're going to be close up to the telly while they're barking at it. Mm. Just keeping them on a lead while you're watching the telly and sitting them by your side might disrupt that behaviour pattern to the point where they don't feel the need to bark anymore.
Yeah. What are they doing, Sabrina? Are they panicking? Do they think the dog's in the room with them or whatever?
No, not necessarily. It's arousal. So they're getting excited. They can see the dog. And of course, tellies nowadays, they've got such good visuals on them, haven't they? It's not like the old tellies of yesteryear that were all grainy. They look really, really realistic to a dog. So they're looking at something, they're recognising the shape of a dog, and they're responding to it as if there was a new dog that's just come into their room.
And do they see colours like we see them?
Not quite. They do see some colours, but not quite the same. We've got different numbers of cones and rods in our eyes. So dogs are actually better at seeing in the dark, low-level lighting than humans, but we can see a greater range of colour than dogs can.
Right. And Danny, have you ever had any dogs that you haven't been able to train?
I've had a very, very naughty dog that I tried to rehabilitate that was a lost cause. It still saddens me to this day. I really worked hard trying to rehab that dog, but sometimes their behaviours are just so ingrained that you have to admit defeat. But that was only one dog that actually got quite badly bitten by that dog.
Oh, dear. And can it be, I don't know which one of you or both of you wants to answer this, but we've always had rescue dogs and we've always had them from puppies. And I know from each one that I've had that even though they were like 8 weeks old when we got them, there is something that happened during those eight weeks that have stayed with them. Do they have memories like that?
No, not really. What usually happens is we latch onto the past, where dogs don't really live in the past. They can, as we know, they learn associatively. So there is an element to that. But the beauty of our dogs is when you understand that they will mold to the environment given, they can let things go much easier than us. So if we were to forget the past and just set up learning outcomes for how we want them to behave in the future, they're very quick to let things go and just move on with their lives. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. We hold on to the past as humans, and dogs just don't have to.
Yeah, yeah. Sabrina, it says the book is also full of lots of hints and tips to help you bond with your dog. Is there anything we should or shouldn't be doing from your point of view?
Well, one of the things that we talk about is how important it is to spend time with your dog and engage with your dog. For example, there was one study that looked at how dogs responded to someone that lived in their household that they were close to and someone else that lived in the household that didn't really bother. And it found that if you don't really bother with your dog, you just coexist with it, then it will respond to you in exactly the same way that it would respond to a stranger. So it's not just about being in the same place. It's about how you engage with your dog. So for example, if you're taking your dog for a walk, it can be really tempting just to kind of scroll on your phone while you're walking or listen to a podcast or something and not really pay attention to your dog. But instead of doing that, if you can spend time bonding with your dog, so when you take it on a walk, take a ball with you or take a toy with you so that you can play a game with your dog or spend time training your dog, teaching it to do something. So it's learning what you want from it and then it's getting rewarded for that. It can be a really good way to foster that relationship, get the oxytocin flowing between you and your dog and build a really strong connection.
And is it a good idea to get some of these, and I don't know what you think about this as well, Danny, these puzzles for dogs, you know, you can put the treats in various doors and they have to work out. Is it good for their brain to keep their brain active?
I mean, you can get them, but they're misused in this day and age. What happens is people shower their dogs with affection to the point where the dog doesn't know how to cope without that affection present. And it morphs into separation anxiety.
Yeah.
And they get these puzzles in an attempt to occupy the dog. But ultimately, we get bored with everything, and dogs do, and they end up back anxious again. Mm. There's nothing wrong with giving your dog a puzzle for a bit of stimulation. But if you're trying to use it to kind of keep your dog occupied away from being anxious, it's going to be at a lost cause. It'll work for a little bit, but they'll always revert back to the anxiety.
Yeah. You've just brought up another question, actually. This is me being completely selfish and thinking about myself now. But we lost one of our rescue dogs in December. So the one that's left, Gracie, thank you. The one that's left, Gracie, has never been on her own. So we probably made a rod for our own back, but we started taking her everywhere with us, which is starting to cause problems. You know, not all restaurants want dogs there. But I feel like because it's been 4 or 5 months, would it be wrong now to try and leave her, even if it was for a short while, and build it up?
No, it wouldn't be wrong at all. You know, like I said, your dog will adapt and morph into the environment you provide. What I would say is don't make it so, don't drag out loads of time where the dog's by itself. Like you just said, start off with little moments alone. And that doesn't mean leaving the room. That also means when you're in the room. So if you've got a crate or an X pen or something, leave your dog in there while you're watching TV for maybe half an hour and then bring the dog back in the living room. Just get the dog used to not actually needing to be in your company, but wanting to be in your company.
Okay, brilliant. And Sabrina, on a personal note for you, what made you decide to write this book? I mean, being a neuroscience is great, but are you an animal lover, a dog lover?
Oh, I'm an enormous dog lover. So my background is slightly unusual, but I experienced homelessness as a teenager. When I was rough sleeping, I had a little stray dog who came up and found me, and I felt like I was a stray girl. So it really seemed to work. The dog was my world. His name was Menace. And many people have a view on those experiencing homelessness who have pets. And what I would say is at a time when I was completely socially isolated, he was the only social and emotional connection I had. So for me, that human-animal bond meant the world. And I know it means the world to so many people and to so many dogs as well, because they've evolved to live alongside us. We're really important to that relationship. And so I wanted to write this book with Danny so that people could better understand their dogs and dogs could be better understood as a result.
Yeah, for their sake. And what about you, Danny? How did you get into dog training?
I just can't remember a time in my life when dogs haven't been in my life, and it just took a natural progression from there. I dabbled in other careers, but ultimately I always trained dogs just for fun. And lo and behold, I could make it a career, and I had no idea I could.
Ah, brilliant. Well done. Well, the book is called What Your Dog Is Thinking, The Science Behind Your Dog's Behaviour and How to Improve It. It's by Dr. Sabrina Cohen-Hatton, who we're speaking to now, and Danny Wells, who we're speaking to now. And we're selling it, as always, on our website right now, tre.radio. Do you both have your own websites or any social media people can look at?
Yeah, I have social media, Unleash Canine. And the website's www.unleashcanineuk.com.
Okay. And I'm on socials under Dr. Sab_Cohen-Hatton.
Cohen-Hatton. Excellent. Well, I thank you both for your time. It's been great to chat to you.
Thank you very much. So much. It's lovely to speak to you.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.